we find that it's important to really understand who is this company that we're sourcing components from. How do they go about designing their components? How do they manufacture their components? And we really focus on working with companies that we can trust.
Hello, and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. I'm Justin Oxner here with Matt Anderson. Today, we're joined by Brett Wendler, Daktronics Vice President of Design and Development. He's going to talk about the differences between a manufacturing process and a broker process for LED technology and everything that goes along with it. We're here today with Brett Wendler. Brett, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We got Matt over here too. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Justin. Thank you.
All right. And Brett, you're here to talk about a different topic, a broker versus manufacturer topic. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your role at Daktronics?
Well, sure. I'm currently the Vice President of Design and Development at Daktronics, which basically means that I'm responsible for all the product development activity at Daktronics worldwide.
All right. And then how long have you been with Daktronics, Brett? Have you always been kind of in this type of role, or can you give me a little bit of history of your time here at DAC?
Yeah, I actually started as a student back in 1992. I was studying electrical engineering at South Dakota State University. And as I started, I worked in the customer service department and then had some opportunity in design engineering as well until I graduated in 94 with my engineering degree. And then really started early in my career, focused on the electronic systems and technology to support these large scale display systems, whether they're outdoor or indoor. And what was kind of fun is that in the mid 1990s is when blue and green LED technology really became viable for large display systems. And so about that time, the mid-90s, is when my focus became more directed towards leveraging those LED technologies into these large-scale systems, these large full-color systems that we see today, whether it be for digital billboards or for large video screens that we might see in all kinds of applications today. And really, my focus continues today in these areas, although in a little different form. While I'm not writing code and designing electric circuits myself, I'm responsible for teams that do all of that good work here in the United States, Canada, Ireland, and in China, really with a focus on developing these large-scale systems, LED display systems, as well as the control solutions for really all kinds of applications across the world.
And how do we do that from Daktronics' standpoint? Can you explain a little bit how we conduct our business in the LED display industry?
Yeah, I would say first, we just recognize and really are fortunate to have customers. It's not something to take for granted, and we certainly don't. It takes a lot of hard work to win a customer's trust, and we value that relationship. And as a company overall, we really strive to keep our customers for life. And what does that really mean? I'd say, as our customers are looking to add to their system, maybe they're looking to update their system or eventually replace their system with something new, we really want to be the obvious choice. And so this overall fundamental concept of striving for customers for life is really foundational to everything we do and what we think about as we think about how we conduct our business. And then you get into what do we do to try to achieve that? And I would say first and foremost, we start by truly making sure we understand what our customers value. How can we help them be successful to meet whatever their objectives are or achieve whatever their objectives might be? And with that understanding then, as a company and myself specifically in product development, we look for opportunities. How could we improve the value that we could provide to our customers, not only for the display system itself, but also other products or services that might help our customers as they're striving to meet their objectives? And so a good example might be the LED display system provides a lot of value by itself. It's a means to communicate, but being able to deliver meaningful content on that display is extremely important. And so that's why we invest in developing our control solutions. We offer content creation services to help our customers, you know, create compelling content to really maximize the opportunity we have with that communication medium. And then ultimately, it's important that the display works well, not only on the first day after it's installed, but throughout the intended lifetime that our customers look to use it. And so we work hard to support our customers after sales to help ultimately, you know, ensure that our customers can have a system that continues to look and work its best. All of that maybe leads up to designing and delivering an LED display system. And I would say, you know, the details there matter as you get into that. You know, as we visit with customers and try to understand what's important to them to help them be successful, you know, an example that might surface is lifetime expectations of the display. You know, I find so often people just assume that, you know, LEDs, they last 100,000 hours, you know, which is 10 plus years. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of this assumption that all displays will last that long. And LEDs are capable of lasting that long, but there's a lot more factors involved to determine whether you're really going to achieve that and achieve it consistently. And so as we visit with customers, we find that there are many examples where customers do value and desire a product that'll last 10 plus years. But there's also customers that would prefer a solution at a lower price and are willing to accept, you know, as long as the product lasts 5 plus years, mm-hmm. that's good enough. And I'd be okay replacing it at that point. And so understanding something critical like that can really influence our approach to design the product, you know, how we select components for the system, and then really even how we qualify the product to meet that type of expectation. So yeah, that's just one example. You could find similar examples in image quality and so forth, but at least that's an example I could surface today.
Yeah, because we're thinking about today, Brett, too, and one of the main, you know, the main kind of talking point here is this broker versus manufacturer outline, and it's talking about what are the key differences between, you know, a manufacturer's model that Daktronics follows versus a broker or distributor model that maybe some other companies follow. Can you elaborate maybe more on kind of what are the differences between those two?
Sure. Yeah, I'll maybe start by talking about a manufacturer type perspective. And as I speak manufacturer, you know, certainly it's going to be heavily weighted towards, you know, how we approach things at Daktronics as a manufacturer. But, you know, just to clarify, when we say a manufacturer, we're really purchasing components, electronic and mechanical components. We're talking about things like LEDs, light emitting diodes, you know, the integrated circuits that get mounted onto a printed circuit board. We're talking about buying sheet metal. We're talking about buying screws, rivets, all this kind of stuff. And and so as a manufacturer, when we're talking about suppliers, we're really talking about the companies that make these components that I just described. And so as a manufacturer, we also design our own products that we manufacture. And so we really have an opportunity then to be deep in the details of the design choices at this component level. The LEDs, the circuit boards, the print, the electronic ICs, those sorts of things. And so that offers a lot of flexibility, you know, as we develop a display system or even our control solution, that we can really ensure that it meets the performance requirements that our customers are asking for. And so it's our responsibility as a design team to do that. But then our suppliers, then we really view them as being responsible for ensuring that they're going to consistently provide us, you know, quality parts that meet, you know, the requirements that we've asked for or that their, you know, specifications would provide. But it's not their responsibility. It's our responsibility to ensure that we're designing the right components into our system. Mm-hmm. And so that's the design part of it. But then as the manufacturer, we're responsible for, you know, taking those component choices we made and then ensuring our manufacturing processes that take those components and assemble them all the way up into the LED display system, that entire system comes together and performs to meet expectations. And so, you know, as a manufacturer, we have a real opportunity, not only in the manufacturing, but also in the design side, to be deep in the details to make those choices. And And it's interesting as you get into the sourcing aspect of all of that that I'm talking about there, it sounds like it'd be pretty straightforward and not too complicated. But if you really want to understand, you know, how, you know, the component choices are, you know, that we make and how the performance of our suppliers are ultimately really going to influence how the product performs, mm-hmm. you know, how does the display perform over its lifetime? It gets kind of complex. And I could offer a couple examples of, you know, that kind of weigh into that complexity a little bit.
Okay.
You know, one example I'd start with is that we really understand that when you design a component in, we're expecting it that when we prototype it up and we test it and say, hey, this is going to work nice, that's going to represent every component we receive from them and every display we build from them. And that may or may not be true. And so we find that it's important to really understand who is this company that we're sourcing components from? How do they go about designing their components? How do they manufacture their components? You know, what is their general approach? Because we really focus on working with companies that we can trust.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they say, yep, this is what it is. This is how it works. This is how we do it. And so forth. This is how it perform. But then they actually follow through and everything happens as they say. They do what they say. And so what we find with our experience is that we really see a lot of benefit in these longer term partnerships with these suppliers, and we can improve and you know, together, but also work together. You know, everyone's interested in how could you take cost out of products. And I believe in general, this partnership with the display manufacturer and, you know, the suppliers that are making components, that's maybe the best way to really look at those opportunities in a holistic way. And so as a part of that, understanding specifications and how their product is supposed to perform is helpful, but how they manufacture those components also matters. And so we find that it's helpful to really understand, you know, do they manufacture themselves? Do they outsource it? What are their quality control systems? You know, how do they ensure that every component coming off the production line performs the same way as the last one?
Mm-hmm.
And so we really focus on putting extra energy there. And, you know, ultimately, when you work with anyone who's building components or displays, you know, if you do it long enough, from time to time, you know, an issue can arise. And what's really important, though, is how do you respond? And in this case, in the supplier context, how is our supplier going to respond? And we really expect that they're going to work with our engineering team to understand the situation. There isn't going to be a pointing of fingers. We're going to work together and improve together and address issues as they arise. And what that really creates is an environment of continuous improvement. So tomorrow we're going to be better than we were yesterday. So all of that's kind of this foundational element as a manufacturer. You're in there deep in the details, kind of our philosophy at Daktronics, how we work with sourcing partners. But all of our sourcing partners have an array of components that we could choose to put in our system. It's still our responsibility to choose the right components, the right specifications to meet our customer requirements. And so if we've done all this previous work with the supplier, then we set ourselves up for more success in choosing the right components, ensuring that whatever we've chosen is going to continue to perform as we expected. And what I find is, you know, the details behind that are much deeper than a specification sheet. You know, it's interesting, you know, maybe even early in my career, I would have, you know, thought similarly is that, you know, as long as the specification sheet says this, then it should work like this. And,
right.
And kind of what I've learned over my experience over the years and challenges we've had to work through is that, you know, if I would use the analogy of a book, a specification sheet is almost like a table of contents, but there's a whole story behind every spec.
Okay.
And when you work closely with these suppliers and you partner, you understand more of the story and not just the table of contents. And so, you know, that's something that as a manufacturer, you just have a much deeper opportunity to get involved at that type of level. And through all that, now you've got a supplier that you're comfortable working with, you trust. We understand a deeper story behind the components that they offer and deliver. And while we trust, we also take a step to verify. So trust, but verify. And so we put very specific effort into you know, how do we ensure and really help our suppliers be successful as well as ourselves and ultimately our customers? And so we audit our suppliers in their manufacturing locations, auditing their quality processes. And we do that so that if we identify gaps, that we can help them improve, and together we benefit to get a more consistent product from them, which means that we'll have a more consistent product to our customers. And so all of these elements kind of come into this broader idea, or at least in my experience, what I've seen, I don't think it's, well, it's definitely not nearly as difficult to successfully build a display, install it, and say, wow, that performed really well. Mm-hmm. It looks good. And, you know, shoot, it lasted as long as we expected. Mm-hmm. That's great. But that's not nearly as difficult as building 100 displays.
Consistently. Yep.
Yeah. Consistently doing that across all 100. That is what's extremely hard. And so
right. As
I'm talking about all these things and our sourcing strategy and how we approach that as a manufacturer, you might go on, gosh, that seems like a lot of overhead work.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're just going to say and look for one display that worked well, yeah, I'd agree with you. But as a customer, if you want to make sure you're not that person that got that one display that didn't go well and gosh, no one can explain why, then you might have a deeper appreciation for why we do all these things to get that consistency.
Right. That sounds like more of a thorough process. And we've talked to Shannon Mochel-Canales in the past about our testing and everything, and he'd test these components and verify that they work. So that's that verification process you're talking about. But it's very thorough to make sure that we're building multiple displays that last as long as they say they're going to last.
Well, I love the analogy you gave, though, Brett, because, you know, when we talk to Shannon, too, a lot of it when it comes to spec sheets, I mean, it's important for the customers to know, because sometimes they put out, you know, they're interested in a project and they have a list of specs that you must meet in order to qualify for it. So even if everyone comes back and has the exact same specs, I love the table of contents analogy that's what that is, but it doesn't always mean that they're all the same. There's a lot more to each one of those.
And, you know, I think one of the things that you're highlighting there is that, you know, I think when people put specification sheets out, you know, whether it's here's what you need to meet or here's a component and here are the specifications of it, I believe that people generally are they're intending that in a positive way. They're well-intended as they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so much detail that goes into even the smallest component you put in a system that it's I don't want to say impossible, but it's very difficult to convey all that detail. And it's also difficult to anticipate, you know, take a look from our supplier's perspective. They're delivering components that may not be used only for the display industry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They're delivering components that be used in lots of other industries as well. And so, you know, what might be meaningful information in regards to how a component's going to perform for a LED display system might be different than the information that might be meaningful for how it's used in a different industry. And so, you know, I think people put a best effort behind specifications. And I guess the reality is there's just a lot of complexity that can't be fully explained through a specification sheet.
And you've been talking about the Daktronics model and how we go through as a manufacturer and put everything together. How does that look for like sourcing components and things on like a distributor or a broker model of a different company?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, I would start by saying, if you look at the distributor model, I would just start by saying that from the start, they really started at a point of disadvantage, and it's really no fault of their own. And what I mean by that is, you know, think of all the detail I talked about as a manufacturer,
mm-hmm.
You know, in order to ensure that you're meeting, you know, the requirements of a customer, that you are consistently delivering that to a customer, and all the work you need to do internally for your process, as well as the understanding you need to have of your suppliers that are providing those key components. A distributor is a whole step removed from all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have a whole nother group of folks in the middle. And so, you know, typically a distributor, they're not buying LEDs and screws and sheet metal and things like that. They're either buying the entire LED display system or, you know, they're maybe buying some of the key assemblies like LED modules, and they're putting it in a cabinet and putting a system, you know, together. And so for them to understand, you know, what was the mindset of the engineer when they designed that LED module? what is their philosophy and how's their approach to sourcing components? How do they ensure that, you know, the components that, you know, the suppliers that are providing to them, how do they know that those are going to be consistent? And so 100 out of 100 displays will perform as expected. And, you know, quite honestly, a distributor, I think in most cases, they don't necessarily have the experience or, you know, they may not even know ultimately the questions to even ask, you know, a manufacturer to understand, you know, those things, you know, much less a component supplier, if they even have access to them. I would say they're just a step removed. And, you know, with anything, you only know what you know.
Well, I just think it was interesting too, Brett. You talked about how they're one step removed already from everything that you had already covered, and it was a lot, and you still gave us an overview of everything that was covered, right? So there's a lot more in detail, and we've been kind of talking about the sourcing of these different materials for these two different models, but can we start to dive in maybe a little bit more towards the manufacturing part of it? I mean, something that Justin and I would see when we come into the office and we go through the manufacturing plant and seeing different things being put together, but how does this go? You know, where we're manufacturing in Brookings, Sioux Falls, and Redwood Falls.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I would say just in general, the benefits really start, you know, as we're developing the product. Our engineering team, design engineering team, we work pretty closely and really directly with our manufacturing engineers who are focused on our processes in the factory. And the whole reason for that is to ensure that any design ideas that we have, that we can, you know, validate or be sure that they're compatible with manufacturing processes that are proven or understood, you know, so that we've got the controls necessary to produce a consistent result out of the factory when we go to production. And so that's really where, you know, it starts. But then after we've really released, you know, that product to market, as a manufacturer, we've got really full control of any change that is made, you know, to the manufacturing process, or because we have this tight relationship with our suppliers, we also have, you know, control of any changes to the components. And I think just in general, at least what I find is that it might be easy to assume that, hey, we shipped the first display, looks great. You can kind of put things on autopilot, let manufacturing just do what they do. But that really isn't the case. I think, you know, any company, and Dectronics included, we're all looking, how could we improve the product? How could we reduce the cost of the product? And in order to do that, you need to change something. And so, you know, constantly folks are going to be looking at, you know, can we make changes to the manufacturing process that would help take cost out? Can we change materials of the product to take cost out? And our suppliers are doing those same things, and that's all good. You know, that's good stuff that improves the product overall and the solution for our customers. But a critical point is that it's really important that any change that's made to the process in manufacturing, whether that's the display manufacturer, you know, assembling it in the display, you know, or the component manufacturer who's, you know, we're buying components from, any changes to their manufacturing process or any material changes, you know, that those suppliers might make, we need to be intentional about how we might introduce those changes into a product as we, you know, continue to deliver to the market. And so, you know, really to achieve that, we need to have a careful qualification process to just validate that any changes are going to continue to meet expectations. And so that's a critical, not just idea, but a critical function to make this all go. And as a manufacturer, again, you're in the details. You can have much deeper control over those changes. You know, and as a distributor, do you even have visibility to those changes? And really what happens if you don't, and changes happen, you're not aware of it, that just creates a lot of uncertainty. You don't know how the product perform after those changes are made. And so this challenge, can you get 100 out of 100 displays to consistently work as expected? In order to achieve that, you have to carefully manage these changes.
Yeah. So we're managing a lot of different things. Like you said, the sourcing and then the manufacturing at our local plants and manufacturing in the USA using foreign parts and creating this display. And we're testing all these different things, or not testing, but we're managing all these different things and putting them into the display. I'm sure that testing is a big part of that to ensure that the products are functioning as we intended. Can you touch base on that process?
Yeah. You know, you hit on some key aspects that make testing meaningful, this, you know, sourcing, manufacturing, and installation of the products. And really, when it comes to testing, the testing methods is something I would add that's important and really provides, has potential, I should say, really to provide insight into how a product's going to perform in the field. And so, when we think of testing methods, you know, a lot of times people talk about their testing capability and they're going to show you a room full of equipment that can do impressive things. While we can test humidity, we can test a range of temperatures, and all of that is good stuff. Mm-hmm. Very good. However, what does each of those tests tell you? And so we've really been leveraging, design for reliability, best practices, as well as our quality manufacturing system practices that we didn't have to completely develop on our own. Certainly we had to tune them for what we do in the display industry. But there's other industries other than the large-scale LED display system industry that's attempting to design and manufacturing products that are in this challenging outdoor environment. We think of the harsh environmental conditions a display is under over the course of 10 years, if you imagine you could put a display anywhere in the world, that's quite a range of environmental conditions that you need to manage. Mm-hmm. And so we can learn from some of these other industries like automotive industry, things of that nature, where they're dealing with similar challenges, but those do need to be tuned to what you're trying to do. And, as we get into testing, leveraging all of these ideas and these methods, that doesn't happen overnight. Certainly the concepts and the general idea and the framework and know-how of how to go about that can transfer from one industry to the next, let's say automotive to LED display systems. Mm-hmm. But, the ability to correlate test results to product performance in the field, that's different. If you ever take a look at a test result, what comes out of a Hall chamber, a highly accelerated life test, that tells you how many cycles at extremely high temperature and low temperature before something broke. Okay, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. That's where it takes the expertise. And so the equipment is a start. Knowing how to use equipment is important, setting up a meaningful test, but then interpreting the results. And so, we've been spending over the last, 10 years focused on how do we, first of all, develop these expertise in the area of the methods and ensuring we're setting up meaningful tests. But we've also been extracting data points from real products in the field, our products in the field, and correlating that to our test results. Mm-hmm. And what that does, it's like creating a translation. Mm-hmm. You translate from here's a lab language of how the product performs. And we're going to translate that to a field language, how it performs out in the field. And developing that translation, it takes a lot of expertise, and that's something that takes time. And like I said, we've been doing that for over 10 years. And, someone who's just starting the journey, similar to my earlier comment on a distributor, you don't know what you don't know until you're really in it and you're continuing to learn. Mm-hmm. And so as I reflect back, we've learned just a ton over the last 10 years. And as you mentioned, Shannon Mouchkinas has talked about that. He can certainly add a lot more detail. So all of that's important. Testing is good, so we can have a meaningful way to say, here's a representative product of what we're going to ship. And we now can, predict reasonably well how it's going to perform. That's good, but that's only meaningful if the components and the manufacturing process that's used to assemble the product that we tested is an accurate representation of the product that we're shipping to the field, shipping to the market. And so, back to my earlier comment, any change that's made in the manufacturing process or to the components like LEDs, we've introduced this uncertainty and we need to intentionally go back and make sure that we've requalified so that we eliminate that uncertainty going forward.
That's so definitely something
that's how this test method interacts with our previous discussion.
Yeah, that's something I kind of, caught here too from you, Brett, is almost it's that, like when you said, if something breaks, whether it's in testing or whatever it is, and now what, right? So it's a matter of how far back can you go to figure out what happened. So when it is that, the more distributor model, how far back can you go before you still don't really know maybe the source of the problem or how it is to fix it? But when you're involved in the entire thing and not just getting it handed off from someone else, you have a lot more control and maybe just a lot more research, I guess, at your fingertips to be able to figure out how do you make this product better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of times we describe it as we want to make sure we get to the root cause. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that we're not going to just assume, oh, it appears it's this that's causing whatever to happen. We really dig in if we need to go to a component that specifically failed, and then we try to understand, okay, it failed, but was it within the specification? In other words, our supplier did their job. We maybe just didn't make the best decision on the component we chose to put in the system, or did the component fall short to what we expected? And then we have to go back and work with the supplier to work through that. And so you're exactly right. It's there's a lot of work to getting into details, really get the root cause. Where's the issue so that we can fix it and correct it in a sustainable way.
I just feel like the amount of, I would say, control over the entire process is even more important when a company like Daktronix, where we help out so many different markets, right? You mentioned, there's a lot of different climate change type of things throughout the world, heat, cool. We put them on cruise ships, but you think about even how the displays are being used among all those different areas, mm-hmm. like a billboard being used differently than maybe a display in a football stadium, and just being able to meet customers' requirements no matter what they are. And they're not just getting an off the shelf LED display that was meant for anything in this type of application.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right.
So thinking about everything that goes into this, the sourcing, the manufacturing, the testing, how does this impact the customer directly? You've talked about different ways that it possibly could, but is there certain things maybe about the lifetime of the display or even the reliability that goes along with that? And what does this mean for the customer?
Yeah, in the context of product lifetime as an example, things that we talked about components and change management of manufacturing or materials, processes, as well as the environment, all really influences how long the product's going to perform. And the reality is that we, as we talked, there's a lot of things manufacturing can do to really manage the components and the manufacturing processes and material changes, kind of the whole change process. But it turns out we can't really control the environment. And so that's one of the things that we need to really understand. And so that's what something we can do. We can't control the environment, but we can understand it. And then we model, based on the environmental conditions around the world, what are the targets that we should be shooting for and then testing to, as we set up our test plan and our test methods. And so, that's a key factor because product lifetime on a display that has less UV exposure, that's in an environment where the temperature doesn't vary that much from the coldest part of the day to the warmest, maybe doesn't get to extreme high temperatures or extreme low temperatures, is going to last the longest regardless of the design choices and manufacturing processes you have in place. But that display that's going to be in that more challenged situation, a very hot environment, a very humid environment, maybe it has a wide range where it gets very cold, very hot in a day, they're going to be more challenged. And so we don't design to the best case environment. We're really designing towards, okay, what is the environment that this product is really going to be used in? And let's ensure that we do that with some margins so that we're successful consistently. As a manufacturer, you're just in a better position because you manage the tests and the supply chain and all of that to bring it all together to do that consistently to hit that product lifetime.
You made me think of when you're talking about an indoor display and going from hot to cool like that, right? Like an NBA or NHL, some kind of arena where they may have basketball and hockey. It's not just the same kind of temperature in there. It's going to fluctuate quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, certainly when we think of temperature variation, we always think outdoor first. And yeah, I think that's appropriate. Outdoors where we're probably going to see it, you know, the greatest extremes. Mm-hmm. But you hit on a really good point. You can't ignore it for indoor by any means. And there's more variation for indoor than you'd expect, especially when you think about it from the perspective of the component that's up there in the display. You know, the product itself, when you turn it on, is going to self-heat and is going to get warmer. And then when you blink the display, it's going to get cooler. And then in addition to that, you're going to have hockey in there. You're a cooler temperature. And then you're going to have, you know, a different event in there that is going to be at a warmer temperature. Or you might turn the air conditioning off and it gets really humid in there. Mm-hmm. And so all of these things matter for indoor. You know, maybe not the same extreme we see for outdoor, but I think there's risk that people ignore it for indoor, and that would be a mistake.
And that brings up another topic of service and support. If something does happen with those changes that happen in the environment or something that we can't control, what do they think of from the service and support aspect?
That's something that oftentimes folks forget about until they've had a bad experience, is that you know, it's exciting to buy a display and have a system for the first time, but then keeping it looking and working its best through its entire life cycle is also important. And it's not just, you know, how the display ages and can you get the parts, for example. Think about it in distributor example. How much influence and control does a distributor have to get the parts you need to keep your system running?
Yep.
Oftentimes people think, oh, you know, the first year or two after it's installed, yeah, they can get the parts. People say they have confidence. And that's not nearly as difficult to accomplish that. But the reality is that if you're in a situation where you're expecting up to 10 years or more in performance from your system, getting the appropriate parts you need at year 8 is quite a different challenge than in year 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, components from suppliers go obsolete and need to be replaced with new ones. You know, display manufacturers may want to move from one generation of product to the next. Mm-hmm. As there's improvements, but you have a display installed and you need to support it and you still need parts for it. You know, as a manufacturer who has a customer for life mentality and thought process, we keep that in mind and we have a plan to support that. If you're going through a distributor model, what is their plan? And are the companies that they're working with, are they on board with that plan? Are they truly positioned to do it? And have they done it before? You know, Dentronics, we've been in the business for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. And carry this customer for life thought process. We understand the importance of making sure we have those parts. And you know, another example that I think sometimes people might not really think of is that, you know, what if you have an unexpected issue where the product's just not performing as you expected? Maybe that issue happens even in the first year it's installed, but maybe it happens in year 2 or 3. So if that happens, who do you call? Who's going to take responsibility for that to make it right? I talked about the example of getting 100 out of 100 displays, you know, working as expected. What if you're that individual got that one that, you know, was an outsider that didn't perform as expected? Who's going to support and take care of that? You know, as a manufacturer in general, especially while with a customer for life mentality, a customer can work direct with them, and that manufacturer is going to take responsibility to make it, you know, help you work through that and make it right.
Right.
As a distributor, you know, they've got to convince the manufacturer. Are they going to take ownership? Is a distributor taking ownership of that? Mm-hmm.
Less finger pointing, kind of
complicated. Yeah, I mean, it's a very different situation when you think of what type of finger pointing could take place there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. You own up to the problem, and I've heard there's been times where a customer went through repeat business with us, and they said it was because something happened to the original display. And we were a little nervous if they're going to go with us again because they had some issues when it got installed. But they said, I remember we interviewed them and they said, you didn't bury your head in the sand when things went wrong. You figured out what it was and you fixed it. And that's the type of company we want to do business with. And so they did like a re-sign with us for the next round of displays. And I remember thinking that was a, it's a little different than you thought it was going to be. They had some service issues, but they loved the fact that we worked through it and we fixed it instead of just running away. And like you're saying, maybe if it was a distributor model, we wouldn't know whose fault it was. And there'd be a lot more finger pointing going on, and who knows what would happen after that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, whose phone number do you call? Who's ultimately going to take responsibility and accountability for it? And that gets complex.
Yep. So I'm thinking, you talked a lot about, you know, the broker versus manufacturing here today, Brett. To kind of wrap it up, though, I think, you know, going back to like 1992, when you were starting as a student working to where you are at now, what has been some of the biggest changes that you've seen since then?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, when I started in 1992, display systems were made out of, the light emitting element was an incandescent light bulb.
Yep.
Or it was a reflective element that would flip between one color and another.
Oh, yeah.
And those were the core technologies. And so when I started that, you know, whether you're making a scoreboard, a digit based type solution, or you're making a large matrix display that might be at, a roadside display, like for a casino, or, the displays you'd find at a sports game, for example, you know, most of them were incandescent. And so part of the service after the sale was just relamping the displays, making sure that all the light bulbs that went out were replaced. And when I was working in service, that was some of the things that that I helped do as a student. It was some of that service. But you know, as LED technology really took off in the 90s, as we are here, we kind of laugh about, wow, I can't believe that's actually, what it was like. But it was. And so now we just take for granted that, you're not going to have to replace, an LED in the system and that sort of thing. And if we do a good job, with all the things we talked about today as a manufacturer, that can be true. That is true. And so that's probably the biggest, the biggest thing that's changed. And then, if you think about that technology transition from incandescent primarily to LED, it just has opened up so many applications. I remember back in those days in the early 90s, we were just thinking about, gosh, this blue and green LED, we could make video displays. And there are folks saying, oh, no way, the CRT technology that was out there at the time, that's really what it takes to make a good video screen. But, sometimes ignoring the critics in that regard and just trying it anyway can really pay off. And that's something we did early on. And, so now you see these huge LED display systems. Just look at what we installed in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Who would imagine a display 60 feet tall, 1,100 feet long in circumference.
Right.
And, that was something unfathomable, back in the 90s. And that's not just for, kind of an outdoor situation, outdoor, indoor, but, same things for indoor. Now we're talking about huge canvases of displays where you can have multiple, videos running on them. And it's exciting. And maybe another industry altogether is the, the billboard market or out of home industry. You look at that where it's been primarily print, or maybe you could on print have it scroll from one ad to the next.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing this transformation towards digital. And I can remember even in the early 2000s conversation, hey, can you imagine? We maybe could do a billboard along the highway. They could change content, as they want. And they don't have to print out and go out there and take the old print down right. And the new one up. And there's people talking like, well, that's fine. That just doesn't seem reasonable. That just doesn't seem likely. How's that going to work? What's the business model behind that? And yet today there's thousands of digital billboards and we've been a part of that. So that's been exciting. And so a lot of exciting changes as technology continues to improve and expand that opens new opportunities. And so exciting to think about what we're going to be talking about 10 years from now.
Right. Well, Brett, that's awesome. I think you shared a lot of helpful information here. I know I'm going to remember that book analogy with the index. I'm going to remember that one going forward, that there's more of a story behind that index there. But thank you for coming on and sharing the differences of how Daktronics manufactures versus a broker system. And thanks for joining us and telling us all about it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks you guys for having me on today.
All right. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Daktronics Experience Podcast. Please subscribe at your favorite place to listen to podcasts to keep up with our latest episodes.